Okay, I want everybody to, everybody that knows what the acronym TCAAP, TCAP, stands for, please raise your hand. 100% maybe. Raise your hand if you ever worked on the TCAP site. Yikes. Wait a minute. Raise your hand if you know somebody who worked on the TCAP site. Okay, I wasn't thinking. Raise your hand if you drink treated water from the TCAP site. All right. There's a handful. Okay. Now, here's a good one. Raise your hand if you know somebody who went to grade school at the TCAP site. Did you know there was a grade school there? All right. Raise your hand if you know how much money has been spent on TCAP. All right. Okay, our next speaker is no stranger to most of you, Sandy Berman. He manages the site remediation and redevelopment section of the MPCA's remediation division. And that's all I'm going to say about him, because he's a man who needs no introduction. And he's going to talk about, well, he's going to talk about what he's going to talk about, because apparently the title leaves something to be desired.
Well, thank you, Eric, and the man who doesn't need an introduction couldn't make it, so you got me instead today. But you're actually stuck with me twice, so maybe I'll say a little bit more about myself for my second talk. So for this talk, I'm essentially picking up from where Kathy Willis-Horns left off, and I'm going to just plug in some numbers and some other hopefully interesting statistics for some of the different types of sites and different program areas that she talked about. Now, the title of this talk, there's a dispute between me and Eric as to who came up with the title. I think it was Eric, probably because he has a portfolio that's actually worth celebrating, mine not quite so much. So we'll just blame him for this topic. But without further ado, to get started, I thought I would kind of introduce to you the basic site types that MRLA, or State Superfund, has set up as far as MPC and MDA go. And a quick and simple way of looking at this is to think about the three major types of activities that happen at State Superfund sites, and essentially at Federal Superfund sites too. You have the assessment phase that John Wilson talked about. This is the initial stage of discovery and figuring out how bad is the site, what are the risks, is it worth going through Superfund or could it go someplace else? Then you have the action of remediation, which is what we are all familiar with. It's the action of actually cleaning up risks, contamination that poses actual risks at a site. So that's the remediation family of activities. And then you have redevelopment, which is the brownfields portion of it. So you have these three kinds of activities that are essentially done by two entities. You have private parties who do these, and they can be responsible parties, or they can be voluntary parties. And you have state lead, and sometimes it's federal lead, but it is the government doing the cleanup because there aren't any other parties available. So when you look at that matrix, the RPs and VPs don't really do the assessment phase, because part of that is to identify who the responsibility lies with. RPs and VPs do remediation, and that is typically what falls into the category of sites called Superfund. So these are the true remediation sites where there's risks, there's receptors, and you're trying to define the extent and magnitude of the contamination, and then you're going to clean it up. Private parties also do redevelopment, and that happens through the VIC programs at both MPCA and MDA. State lead sites, either it's PCA or EPA, a lot of assessment work happens, and that's done under what's called the Site Assessment Program, which is really a sub-program of state and federal superfunds. You also have the state lead sites in that remediation category, and these are your listed sites, both federal and state. This is government doing the cleanup. There are no responsible parties. So under the remediation slab, you essentially have private party-led sites and state-led sites, and together these make up what we commonly call as the remediation program or the Superfund program, and then you have the redevelopment or the VIC subset of Superfund. And why this is important is because I frequently see people struggle, because this is kind of arcane and it's sort of bureaucratic, but it does affect caseloads, and it affects the pathways that the sites many of you work on follow, and it definitely affects the workload and the caseload at the state agencies and at EPA. So if you keep this matrix in mind, let's look at what these translate to in terms of numbers. So the light green color, I think that's how it shows up on the screen. It's hard for me to tell. But that color is the site assessment phase or the assessment sites. So currently there are 67 sites that are active site assessments at the MPCA. So these are sites where releases have been reported or have been discovered. They are serious enough that the assessment phase has to happen to determine what the risks are, who the receptors are, and what is the best pathway to progress these sites along. So that site assessment arm of Superfund currently has 67 open sites. Then we move to the Superfund sites, which is the name that we have taken to commonly refer to the actual cleanup sites. Between the two agencies, there's 170 sites in this category. These are true remediation projects driven primarily by the need to understand and control risks and to protect public health and the environment. There's 170 of these sites in the MPCA and NDA Superfund program. And then you have the redevelopment sites. There's 551 open redevelopment sites currently between the MPCA and NDA brownfield programs or the VIC programs. Now, there's certainly risk at these redevelopment sites. Sometimes it's past risk, sometimes it's future risk. But the work is driven typically by a voluntary party, and the impetus was redevelopment. And in the process, there's, of course, attendant risk reduction and public health protection, environment protection that gets accomplished at the same time. So that's sort of the family of Superfund and the current population. So if you look at this in terms of a portfolio, the site assessment sites, these are kind of your unpredictable, volatile situation. They're boom or bust, so emerging market equities maybe. The Superfund cleanup sites, maybe more the U.S. stock market, even though it's kind of crazy sometimes. Then you have the redevelopment sites. Well, that's what the big money is, and that's where maybe that's your bond market. Kind of a crude analogy, but I don't know if that reflects Eric's portfolio, but maybe it gets pretty close, right? I think Eric is kind of more in the high risk type probably at this point. So I hope that makes sense. That's how the site numbers pan out between the two agencies. When you look at these different types of sites and how they get distributed amongst the programs, and the three main programs that you hear often is site assessment, Superfund, and VIC. So I'm going to zoom in on the 170 active VIC sites. Active Superfund sites. So tells you how hard it is to keep track of this stuff. So when you look at those 170 active Superfund sites, which are basically your cleanup sites, 87 of them are led by responsible parties. Obviously under state oversight, but these are responsible party-led sites. The other 83 are the sites that are on the state Superfund list. And again, this distinction is important because a lot of people think that the state Superfund list is the totality of the universe. It's not. It's actually less than half the number of sites that are in the state Superfund program between the two agencies. 83 sites are currently on the state Superfund list. 87 are not on the state Superfund list. But there is no distinction between these two sets of sites in terms of severity or risk or the need to clean them up. They are the same. It's just that administratively, regulatorily, some of them went a different pathway and did not end up on the state Superfund list and the others did. So that's your 170 active Superfund sites currently. If you look at the sites that are just on the state Superfund list that everybody likes to talk about, 52 of those sites are state lead sites. So these are fund finance sites that either MPCA or MDA are responsible for. There are either no viable responsible parties at these sites, or they're unwilling or unable to do it. And we're doing the work. We may or may not see cost recovery depending on the individual situation. So 52 of those 83 are state lead sites. The other 31 sites do have RPs associated with them. And the difference here between these 31 that are on the state Superfund but still have RPs, and the 87 that have RPs but are not on the state Superfund, is just a question of timing. On the 87 RPs that are in the state Superfund program but are not on the list, the negotiations with the RPs went along a different pathway, and there was no need to list them. The 31 that are on the state Superfund list but have RPs, those just happen to be sites where the state listing probably facilitated the dialogue with the RPs, brought them to the table, and the RPs eventually stepped up and took over the cleanup. So that's how the 83 sites on the state Superfund list break out. The basic Superfund site stages, this is just a simplified version of what John Wilson shared with you this morning, the more elaborate federal Superfund phase. Once you break it down into essentially what really is the life cycle of a site, once again, you have the site assessment phase, the initial stage of figuring out how bad the site it is and where should it go. You have the remedial investigation feasibility study, really more commonly called as the remedial investigation phase. This is the bulk of the work that's done to understand the contamination, to define the risks, and come up with a plan for the site. Then you have the next phase, which is remedial design and your remedial action. This is where you figure out what's the best remedy and you actually do the remedy. And then you have all of those activities that we just call completion. And this is your delisting and post-closure maintenance and institutional controls and long-term care, all of that. So this is just a more an abbreviated, more collapsed version of the more formal, elaborate federal Superfund process. So let's look at how the current set of sites get distributed amongst these four phases. The site assessment phase, I already said there are 67 sites, and that's very much the case. These are in that initial stage of understanding the sites better. 100 sites of the 170 active are in that remedial investigation phase. So we're still figuring out, our responsible parties are figuring out, how bad is the contamination, what are the risks, what are the pathways, and what should be done. 70 sites are in the RDRA, the remedial design, remedial action phase. So this is the actual work of cleaning up the sites through a physical process, whether it's excavation or pump and treat or soil vapor extraction, and whatever else. So the idea here is to keep this cycle kind of turning over, this wheel turning over in the clockwise direction. So you want your site assessment sites to get done and go to the RIFS. You want the RIFS sites to get done, go to RDRA. And then you want them to be kicked out of the cycle and go to the completion phase. And at that point, you have success. So that I hope that makes sense. This is it's a cycle. It's kind of a phased approach. And the more we can push sites through the cycle faster, the better we are at controlling risks and managing some of the contamination issues. I thought this might be of interest. I think John Wilson shared with us the national trends on NPL listing. This is the corresponding state listing trends from 1984 to 2014. So you can see the early years, a lot of listings. 1984 remains the biggest year so far. And then you kind of had a steady drop off. We had the middle years when there wasn't much going on. There was a steady trickle of listings and delistings. Last few years, we've seen an uptick in state listings. And this is likely to continue for the next few years. In 2015, we expect we will list about the same number that we listed in 2014. 1984, does anybody know what else happened in 1984? There was a milestone event that happened in 84. No takers? Well, MGWF was founded. Isn't that correct? Come on, Pete. Shame on the board. So there we go. That's the trend. It sort of mirrors the national trend, except perhaps a little bit more of an uptick in the more recent years, and we're projecting that to perhaps continue. Location of the state Superfund sites. And again, I should mention that we have had 443 sites go through over the history of the program, 30 years. 273 have been closed, giving us the 170 that are still active. And you can see these 170 and the closed sites are distributed across the state. The metro definitely has a cluster of sites, not surprisingly. But there's a pretty, you know, fairly even statewide geographic distribution of both closed and the active sites. Moving on, the accomplishments, list of numbers and just go through them real quickly. 443, number of sites that has gone through state Superfund. 170 sites that are currently active. 254 sites ever listed on the state Superfund. And again, the distinction is state Superfund is just a subset of the full-blown state program. It's not one and the same. It's really about half the sites. The other half never made it, but they were just as serious. 83, currently the number that's on the state Superfund list. 46 have is the number of sites that has ever been listed on the NPL, on the federal Superfund list in Minnesota. 25 of these are still active. 21 have come off the national list. 4,632, number of sites that have gone through the VIC programs at both the agencies. 551, the current active caseload of the VIC programs at the two agencies. 25,000, approximate number of acres that have been approved for use through the VIC programs. So that, at a glance, is kind of the accomplishment of MERLA programs in Minnesota. And that's really all I had. I want to really thank Kathy Willis-Horns and Craig Bigelow for providing the numbers. Craig does all of our reporting for the PCA Superfund program, so he's our person. Kathy was good enough to give us the corresponding numbers from Department of Ag. I apologize for having the MPCA logo on this slide, not because I have any problems with the MPCA, but I wanted to put the MDA logo on here because this really is a joint presentation, but I couldn't figure out how to do that. It did strange things to the slide, and I couldn't get the MPCA logo off either, so I would kind of stuck there. So, with that, any...
My God, I think we actually have time for a couple of questions. Okay. That's a good thing.
The website says 84, so I... You know.
I happen to be tagged as a charter member. I should, yes.
Sandeep, I didn't see on your slides how the changes in HRLs and other health risk factors in the last couple of years is affecting these numbers. Are there a lot of sites that are coming back onto the list? I know of a few.
So there's definitely a few, and that's a great question, Paul, and a complicated one. And I'll be addressing that a little bit more in my afternoon talk. And then you'll see there's another talk that Ann Morris is going to give, and she's going to delve into a little bit more of some of this reopening. So, but great question, very relevant.
Okay, thank you, Sandeep.